The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. After he had fed the people, Jesus made the disciples get into a boat and precede him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. After doing so, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When it was evening, he was there alone. Meanwhile, the boat, already a few miles offshore, was being tossed about by the waves, for the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, he came toward them, walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. "It is a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. At once, Jesus spoke to them, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him in reply, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat and began to walk on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw how strong the wind was, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught Peter and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And they got into the boat, and the wind died down. Truly, those who were in the boat did him homage, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord.
At the beginning of today's gospel, St. Matthew tells us that Jesus went up into the hills to pray by himself. He had just finished a very long day, teaching the crowds, healing the sick, performing the miracle of the multiplication of the loaves, and in the morning he found out, before all of that, he found out that his cousin, John the Baptist, was put to death. Remember, he had his head chopped off. And at that time, he wanted to go off alone, to reflect, to pray, to mourn the loss of his cousin. But the crowds wouldn't let him. They pressed in on him. So he sends his disciples off, and he goes up the mountain to pray. And that would have been around sunset during that evening. And then he doesn't appear again until 3 o'clock in the morning. About 6 hours, we would say. And we know from other gospel passages that Jesus frequently went off by himself to pray. Now, when you think about that, isn't that a little strange? I mean, Jesus is God, the second person of the Blessed Trinity. And so, why does he need to go off and pray? Well, it's because Jesus had two natures. He was both human and divine. And because he was human, he needed to pray. And he prayed to his Father that he would do his Father's will. Human nature is not meant to go at it alone. As the Catechism tells us, man was created to live in communion with God, in whom he finds happiness. And no one can have communion with God unless you pray to God. You have to have a life of prayer as well. Well, this same lesson we see in the first reading, one of the most beautiful passages, I think, in all of the Old Testament, with the prophet Elijah, who's on the run because he had a contest, I guess we'd call it, with the pagan prophets who had allied themselves with the evil queen Jezebel. And Elijah came out victorious, of course, in that encounter, and it made Jezebel all the more furious, and so she's out to kill him. She must have been quite a woman, huh? Well, he went off to escape to the mountains in the desert to pray. That's what he did. So why would he pray at this time? Well, first he needed to renew his strength. He was worn out from all of the little battles going on with the other prophets and the evil queen herself, who had all the power in her pocket. So he's tired. He's discouraged. He wants to give up. And what does he do when those feelings come upon him? He goes off to a sacred place to pray. And the second thing is, he needs some guidance here. He needs some light shining on the path that he's supposed to take, because he doesn't know what to do next. He doesn't know where to turn. He doesn't know how to proceed. He's unclear about what God is asking of him. And so what does he do when he has those kinds of feelings? He goes off to a sacred place to pray. He goes to Mount Horeb. And you can't get much more sacred than Mount Horeb, because what happened on Mount Horeb? That's where Moses received the Ten Commandments, the covenant of the Old Law. It's a sacred place, just as every Catholic church is a sacred place. Why? Because this is where we celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus. We celebrate the Mass, which is the holy sacrifice of the new everlasting covenant. It's even more sacred, we could say, I guess. So like Elijah, we need to pray. So how do we pray when all of those kinds of things that, like Elijah went through and Jesus was going through, happened to us? Well, we have their example of how to pray. We need to make time. It's just not going to happen unless we make time. Turn off the television, turn off our iPads, turn off whatever it is that we're occupied with most of the time, and we make time to pray. Make time to pray. 10 minutes. It's a good start. And there are many ways we can do this, to make time to pray and to pray. First, we can do something, you know, that we always suggest when we have our annual stewardship renewal and we have our commitment cards of what we're going to commit to for the following year, for 1 year. It's a one-year commitment. And that is to make a retreat. That's one of the things under a spirituality, is that we make a retreat. Now, it would be great if we could all make a retreat every year, wouldn't it? Maybe go off for a week to the mountains, to the desert, whatever it might be. I go to the desert, to Vallejo, California, to the Benedictine Abbey. I can't take all of you with me. They only have so many rooms. But realistically, that's a little difficult to do, isn't it? Not impossible for everybody, but it is difficult. What about one weekend a year? That could be arranged. It's a bit of a commitment. How about one day a year to make a retreat, a one-day retreat? That is very doable, to give 1 day to a retreat, to have that kind of quality time. We have our annual stewardship retreat coming up next month, and everyone is invited to come, not just parish leaders, but everyone. And it's 1 day. It's going to start about 8 a.m, and it'll be over by 3:00 p.m. You get good food. And as well as, we have a wonderful speaker coming, Father Brian O'Brien. I want to go just so I can see someone named Brian O'Brien. And I did meet Father Brian O'Brien, and I heard him speak at a stewardship conference earlier this year. And I have to say this, he is an excellent speaker. He's humorous, he's sincere. He tells about what's going on in his two parishes that they had to merge in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And they discovered that 40% of the people were already registered in both parishes. And he's going to be a great speaker, and he's going to talk about stewardship and the saints. Two great topics, stewardship and saints, to put them together. And everyone is invited to come, and it's free. Just let us know you're coming so we have enough food and chairs ready for everybody. The second thing we need to do to develop this sense of prayer is to pray every day. To make it a daily commitment, just as I mentioned before, to carve out that 10 minutes time or 15 minutes time to truly give those minutes out of the 1,440 minutes God gives every one of us every day, to take just 10 of those minutes to pray. It's a good habit to get into. And lastly, There's a very privileged moment of intimate personal contact with our Lord that happens every Sunday here in church or Saturday evening when you go to Holy Communion. When we have those precious moments of silence to speak heart to heart with Jesus. The sacred space of this church is just like Mount Horeb, even more sacred. And we set this sacred space aside for that personal encounter with Jesus. And I have to tell you and share with you something that happened here in our church early yesterday morning that desecrated this sacred space. At about 2 o'clock yesterday morning, early Saturday morning, a 30-year-old man from Painesville, he broke into the church. He's kind of clever. He went into the Adoration Chapel, which is always open. If you can see there, there's the window there, the lower window, he punched it out with his hands, and he came through the window there. There's no alarm on an inside window. There are on all the doorways and inside, outside doors, and inside doors are all alarmed, as well as motion detectors here in the sanctuary, but there's nothing there. So he had quite a while, and he basically did little things, but desecrated things. In the Adoration Chapel, he took the crucifix off the wall and smashed it. He also smashed the vigil light. He smashed the lights up here on both sides, not all of them, but many of them. There was a lot of glass and some blood from his cut hands on them. He went into my confessional. I thought maybe I gave him a heavy penance one time and he was getting back at me, but I shouldn't make light of it. But he just did odd things, throwing things out and didn't make sense. And he did several other things too. He threw the big bells. They're still usable. I don't know why they're not here. They still ring. He threw them into the pew and they got dented. They're very heavy. So that was a kind of a silly thing to do. And he threw the candlesticks down on the ground, but it didn't hurt the candlesticks. Those things are very heavy. Broke the candles. So he did those things. And when I reported all of this to Father Schlegel, who's the vicar for clergy, and then he said he would tell the bishop. And then I also sent an email to Father Don Alexiak, who is really the assistant to the bishop and everything. He's called the moderator of the clergy. So they told the bishop, then he called my good friend, the judicial vicar, Father Yanis, later in the day. And so in the evening, after I got back from a mission barbecue with Father McNeil, I had a phone call from, it's our favorite place to go. I had a phone call from Father Yanis saying the bishop says that it was a desecration of the church and that you have to do either a mass of reparation or say the desecration prayers before you can have another mass. Now, that's a very important thing in the church. The Eucharist was not desecrated. Thank God this man did not touch either of the tabernacles. But he did desecrate the church by his actions and by the violence that took place, smashing windows and so on. And so desecration, the act of reparation is usually done by a bishop, but he can delegate that to another priest like the pastor. So I was informed by Father Yanis that the bishop has delegated me to do the reparation. However, you can't do the reparation mass on a Sunday. And we have two masses today. So Father Yanis suggested that Father McNeil and I do the reparation prayers by ourselves, which we immediately did. And we sprinkled the whole church, all the aisles, the pews, the baptistry, the altar, the credence table, everything that was touched by this act of desecration, everything was sprinkled with holy water as we completed the prayers of reparation. And so that's what we did. And that was the least we could do when a sacred space, which is our encounter with God, is violated by violence, by a despicable act. That's what we did. And we prayed for all of you, even though you couldn't join us in this act because of the time involved. It had to be done immediately. But it was the thing to do to make up for the desecration. Because prayer matters most. And our deepest encounters occur right here in church as we celebrate the sacraments, our deepest encounters with Christ himself. Because he is the only lasting source of our happiness.